You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 oh.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder, Baseball Central, and I am rolling solo today. Vince and I had planned to record together on Sunday evening, but Vince had something come up, so it's just me today, but Vince should be back with me tomorrow. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about Buster Olney's lists that have started trickling out. He lists the top 10 players at each position. So far we have four positions out, starting pitcher, relief pitcher, catcher, and first base. So we'll talk a little bit about those and how they pertain to the Dodgers. And then we're going to talk about Stan Kasten's comments to Bill Plaschke about the Dodgers offseason and spending and all that. So that's the plan, but first we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts, and when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, so Buster Olney, his lists are out. I'm going to admit to you guys a little bit of a bias first, which is that I'm not a big Buster Olney fan. I think he is a good reporter. I think, I'm not sure how to say this delicately, I don't think being a good reporter and a good writer necessarily qualifies you to or makes you a good baseball analyst. And so when it comes to making lists of the best players, I don't know that he is the most qualified to do that. One example is looking at the catcher list. JT Realmuto is at the top of the list. I don't have an issue with that. He's very good. Yasmani Grandal, obviously one of the best hitting catchers in baseball, a great framer. Even we Dodger fans, we saw Grandal at his worst sometimes, but he still is absolutely a very good catcher. Roberto Perez with the Indians, okay. Christian Vasquez with the Red Sox, okay. Gary Sanchez. Number six, Yadier Molina. I respect Yadier Molina. But just if you read this paragraph that only says about Molina, it's difficult to find an appropriate place for Molina on this list because after his more than 2,000 games of the regular season and postseason, the signs of physical regression are there for the 37-year-old future Hall of Famer. That's the opening sentence, referring to him as a future Hall of Famer. I don't think it's an open and shut case. I think he might be in the Hall of Fame. I think he might deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not a no-doubter. If you look at his actual overall numbers, there's a lot more legend than substance to Yadier Molina. And the fact is, the last few years, he has been a lousy hitter. And so his defense has been okay, but not as good as it was when he was younger, and he's been a lousy hitter. And basically, Olney's main justification for putting Molina where he did on the list is, but as one evaluator said, Molina will always compete for every pitch of every inning, for every plate appearance, and that is a highly valued quality in a catcher. So he competes. Okay, whatever. So anyway, the reason I'm talking about catcher is Will Smith was number 10. On Olney's list, just got one short paragraph, says that the Dodgers turned over a championship-caliber pitching staff to a rookie, said everything you need to know about Smith, who reminds evaluators a lot of Buster Posey in his skill set and demeanor. In his first 170 plate appearances, Smith had an adjusted OPS plus of 134, a sign of what's to come. So, Will Smith is on the catcher list. Starting pitchers, Walker Buehler was number 7. The guys ahead of him, it's hard to quibble too much. Garrett Cole's number 1. Jacob DeGrom, Justin Verlander, Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, Jack Flaherty. Of those, Flaherty is the only one that I'm confident Buehler will for sure, not for sure, but I'm confident Buehler will be better than in 2020. I think if you're starting a franchise, obviously, because of Buehler's age compared to Strasburg and Scherzer and Verlander and Tegram and Cole even. You know, you'd go with Buehler, but I don't have too much quibble with him being number seven currently. I expect him to be higher next year after he wins the Cy Young Award in 2020. But, you know, he also just got one short paragraph. It says he made an all-star team for the first time last season and was mentioned on Cy Young ballots for the first time. There will be more of that in the years ahead for Buehler, who had a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 5.81, better than any of John Smoltz's seasons as a starting pitcher, an indication of just how much better Buehler might become. And then, interestingly, Hyunjin Ryu did not make the list, or not even the honorable mentions. Clayton Kershaw did. He was actually the first one listed in the best of the rest section. Said at 31 years old, 32 in March, he has fully transitioned into the crafty lefty stage of his career when he can't simply blow the ball past hitters the way he once did. But he's still pretty darn good, finishing 7th in the National League in ERA last season at 3.03 and striking out more than a batter per inning. So that's, I don't know. Kershaw is so hard to get a handle on because it's hard to really know what to expect from him next year, health-wise, velocity-wise, just overall pitching performance-wise. It's really hard to know for sure what we're going to get out of Kershaw. And so, yeah, based on where he is, I guess, based on what he did last year, it makes sense to have him there. But it's, I don't know. My biggest question mark of the Dodgers going into this season is Clayton Kershaw and what the Dodgers can get from him. Then the Dodgers didn't have anybody on the relief pitcher list in the top 10 or in the honorable mentions, which isn't surprising. Kenley Jansen has the only guy on there in their bullpen who historically would have been on this list, and obviously last season didn't merit that. But then on the first base list, it was kind of interesting. The Dodgers didn't have anybody in the top 10 or in the honorable mentions, but they actually got talked about more than just about anybody. It's pretty interesting. He said, last year, the Dodgers led all teams in WAR generated at first base at 6.4 without really having an everyday first baseman. Four players pitched in at least 200 defensive innings at the position, and 10 players manned the spot for at least three outs on defense, including reliever Adam Kolarik. Max Muncy appeared at first base a lot, but for the sake of the top 10, he'll be ranked among the second basemen. The Dodgers aren't alone in this practice, of course. League-wide, the percentage of plate appearances by a team's primary first baseman has steadily declined. 1989, 76% of innings were played by the team's all teams' primary first baseman. 99, 72%. 2009, 71%. 2019, 65%. It says Sarah Langs, who came up with those stats, thought of another way to qualify this in a note. There were 16 players this season who qualified for the batting title and played at least 50% of their games at first base, the generally accepted definition of someone's primary position. That was the fewest in any season since 1990, when there were 15 such players. Freddie Freeman was at the top of the list, Pete Alonso second. Nothing really to write home about. And if Muncy is the Dodgers' starting first baseman, I think he would deserve to be there. I assume he will be pretty high on Olney's list of second basemen. We'll talk about that list when it comes out. I assume it's coming out today-ish. I know there was a schedule on here. Let's see. Second baseman. Yeah, today, Monday. So maybe tomorrow's episode, we'll talk a little bit about that. But I think that, you know, that's Olney's list. It's nothing wrong with it. Like I said, I don't buy too much into Olney as an analyst. So it is what it is. But I'll be back in a minute to talk about Stan Kasten's comments to Bill Plaschke. But first, I want to talk to you about Arizona. The Dodgers have spring training in Arizona, as you know. You can follow the Dodgers to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Great weather. It's a beautiful place, especially in the spring. Exciting outdoor adventure. Incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. I've been down there for spring training five times, I think. It's a great place to go for spring training. You guys, most of you live in Southern California, and so you're accustomed to good weather. So the great spring weather in Arizona isn't as much a selling point as for, say, me, who lives in Utah. And so it's usually snowing here when I'm driving down to Arizona. And so the beautiful spring weather in Arizona is definitely a selling point for me. But it's not just the Dodgers. There's 15 teams in Arizona. Total of 10 stadiums, I think, and they're all within about an hour drive or less of each other, maybe 45 minutes. And you can bounce around and see a lot of games. I actually, in 2015, I think, I actually went to 3 games in one day. It happened to be the same day that Will Ferrell played for 10 teams in one day, and I was actually at 2 of the 5 games that he played in. So I saw him play for 4 teams that day. Including the Dodgers and Padres. If you like hiking, there's Camelback Mountain in Arizona. Beautiful, a lot of hikes, a lot of outdoor activity. There's a lot of great restaurants. It's family friendly. You know, there's a lot of stuff for kids to do. I've taken my sons 3 times, I think. We always have a lot of fun. There's family friendly resorts if you're looking for that. Water parks, horseback rides, games, activities. So yeah, Arizona has a ton of stuff, science museums, aquariums. The Arizona Office of Tourism Spring Training is one of the sponsors of Locked On Dodgers. And if you haven't been to Arizona for spring training, you should definitely check it out, whether as a Dodger fan or just as a baseball fan. I've done it both ways, focusing just on the Dodgers and seeing as many teams as I can. And it's a lot of fun. And it's a quick little drive from the LA area. So check out Arizona for spring training. And, of course, keep it locked on Dodgers. Okay, let's jump into our obscure former Dodger of the day. I'm going to talk about Stan Kasten's comments in a minute. And one of the topics that he and Bill Plaschke covered was Kasten's time with the Braves. And so I was thinking about guys who played for those good Braves teams. And for the Dodgers, and I came across a pretty obscure guy, Paul Bocco. He was a catcher. He played almost exclusively as a catcher. He played a little bit of first base a couple years and played some DH 1 year when he was with the Royals. And other than that, he was just a catcher. He played 12 seasons, a total of only 789 games, so he was never a regular. But he played for 11 different teams in those 12 seasons. He played parts of 2 seasons with the Braves, 85 games, 220 plate appearances. He played just 13 games with the Dodgers. That was in 2005. He batted .250. Was not much to write home about, believe it or not, for a guy like Paul Bocco. But yeah, he started with the Tigers, then the Astros, then the Marlins, then the Braves, then the Brewers, then the Cubs, then the Dodgers, then the Royals, then the Orioles, then the Reds, then the Phillies. So he bounced around, and then he was done, and basically had about as unspectacular a career as you can imagine. The guys on Baseball Reference, his similarity scores, the top 10 similar players are guys who most of them you haven't even heard of, and if you have, it's only because it's like, oh yeah, that was an obscure catcher. Matt Walbeck, Hobie Landreth, Chris Cannizzaro, Duffy Dyer, Phil Roof, Fred Kendall, Ellie Rodriguez, Joe Ginsburg, Mark Hill, and Gene DeSottels. So, Paul Bocco doesn't even have a claim to fame for me to mention. He was just an obscure former Dodger. So, let's talk about Stan Kasten's conversation with Bill Plaschke. Basically, I'll read Plaschke's intro. As with all Plaschke articles, I don't actually recommend you read it. I'll read the important parts to you. I wouldn't want the LA Times to get the impression that that people like Plaschke, so I don't want you actually clicking on his links. I took that hit for you. He started with, "The boos have finally gone deep. This Dodgers fans' annual offseason frustration, which usually swirls around the dugout of Dave Roberts or the desk of Andrew Friedman, has soared beyond both this winter and landed loudly and directly in the loftiest of chairs. The blame has reached ownership. The October-worn fingers are being pointed at Guggenheim Baseball Management." So he says fans want to know why the team isn't spending more money. Many fans who continue to set Dodgers attendance records don't feel their incredible loyalty is being rewarded with a commensurate ownership commitment, and they want to know why. So I phoned Stan Kasten and asked him. Bill Plaschke, man of the people. I hate Bill Plaschke. I think he's a garbage reporter. I think he actually hates the Dodgers, and he is a guy who thinks being controversial is the same as being good at your job. I think Bill Plaschke sucks. I think he's bad at his job. I think he is bad at, I think he's a grumpy old man. I don't think he understands the current game of baseball. I don't know if he was ever good at his job. I'm only 42. I'm not 550 or however old he is, so I don't know if he was ever good at his job. But Bill Plaschke is bad at his job, but he still has that job, and he did talk to Stan Kasten. I am also on record as saying I was pretty upset with Kasten's comments last year. I actually wrote an article about it on Baseball Essential. Basically, my opinion then was Stan Kasten shouldn't be allowed to talk. He is out of touch and doesn't understand what people are thinking, how things will come across. But maybe it's Bill Plaschke's superpower that when I'm reading this, I agree with almost every word that Stan Kasten said. And so I'm going to read you some of those words. In fact, I'm just going to read you most of this article so you don't have to click on it. I mean, it's mostly in the context of Plaschke just lays out the question he asked Kasten and then quotes Kasten's reply. And so I will paraphrase the Plaschke parts and I will read verbatim the Kasten replies. Plaschke says, I gave him an opportunity to address Dodgers fans' concerns about ownership, and he emphatically embraced it. Kasten said, the LA Times characterization that everyone hates us has always been childish, superficial, and wrong. I love it. I love he came right out and said, because he says the LA Times, but what he means is Bill Plaschke. He said, he started off the conversation by saying, Plaschke, you're a moron. And so I'm definitely on board with that. Plaschke asked him how he defines success. Does he believe 7 division championships without a World Series championship is success? And Kasten said, and this answer started to scare me because it started off kind of the way last year's comments came across as out of touch and frustrating, but he got there. So if you read the whole thing, it's okay, or listen to the whole thing. So the frustrating part says, there are metrics in business that are mostly private that we look at, and I'd say we feel successful there. Oh, come on, Stan. But then he got back on track. But there's no question that all of us who are competitive, from every owner that has a piece of the team to the junior people in the front office, we're laser focused on winning the World Series. We really, really need that. And I've been saying that I believe there's two things I believe. One, I believe that winning a World Series would be good for business. People say Guggenheim only cares about making money. I think winning a World Series would make more money for the Dodgers than anything else they could do. And the other thing I believe is that they know that. People think that winning the World Series and being successful financially are conflicting goals, but they are the same goal, because the team, if you can win the World Series, you are going to be successful. What the Dodgers are trying to do, this is Jeff Snyder talking, I'm not back to the Stan Kasten quotes, but what the Dodgers are trying to do is build a team that has a chance to, if you look at the teams that, like the Royals won a World Series. Awesome. They've won a World Series much more recently than the Dodgers. The Royals now suck again, and they don't really have any prospects of being good anytime soon. And personally, yes, I can't wait till the Dodgers win the World Series, but I love having hope every year. And I would not want to be in the Royals' position of having won a World Series 4 years ago and now being terrible for the foreseeable future. It just doesn't appeal to me. I want the Dodgers to win a World Series and then have a chance to do it again the next year, and then have a chance to do it again the next year, and 3 years after that, and 5 years after that. And that's what they're trying to build. Plaschke says, based on the offseason spending, it seems as if Kasten is satisfied with just winning the division every year and unwilling to write that extra check. And Kasten said, some people may think that, and I think that's silly and contrary to the facts. I think there were 3 teams in all of baseball that spent more than us last year. 2 of them didn't make the postseason, so to say we don't spend enough, it's ludicrous. And then you see teams with much smaller payrolls that make the postseason and even win the World Series. It's obviously not about what you spend, it's about the moves you make, the decisions you make. I think questioning those things, criticizing those things, that's absolutely fair. But just to say there's a payroll number you need to hit, and if you don't hit it, you're not trying, that's just silly. Preach, Stanley. I, Jeff Snyder, absolutely agree with every word of that. And I've made the point sometimes, tell me what moves you wanted the Dodgers to make. And most of the time, it's like, you know, in this offseason, there are more that it's easy to point to. Yes, we wish they had signed Gerrit Cole. They went all out, and we'll talk more about Cole in a minute. We wish they had signed Rendon. Rendon didn't want to play in L.A. All those things. But most of the time, it's just like, oh, the Dodgers aren't spending enough. Well, you can only spend on the players that are available. It's not like Max Scherzer is a free agent right now. Yeah, the Dodgers missed on signing Scherzer when he was a free agent. That was a long, long time ago. Different front office, you know. But lately, it's not like there have been any... The big name free agents, the big dollar free agents, David Price, how did that work out for the Red Sox? Zach Greinke, you know, you could quibble about that. I have opinions on the Greinke thing that I've probably said on this show before. Basically, in summary, the Dodgers correctly predicted that Greinke was only going to be throwing 88 miles an hour at this age. What they incorrectly predicted was they thought that would mean he would stop being as good, but somehow he's figured out how to get people out. But they were basically right in that analysis. They're just wrong in what it meant. But some of the other big contracts, you know, people say J.D. Martinez. Well, he's not an outfielder. He's a DH. The Dodgers don't have that position available. A lot of guys, it's not, I mean, there are guys the Dodgers could spend money on. It wouldn't make their team better. The fact is that the Dodgers have been really smart about the moves they've made. And what I liked is that Kasten called BS on the whole idea of, oh, you just care about winning the division. You don't care about winning the World Series. It's where later on Plaschke said something about October difference makers. And the fact is, I'll jump down to there. Plaschke, he says, when Kasten says year in and year out, that makes fans worry that his priority isn't the stars who can capture October, but the consistency he nurtured while running the Atlanta Braves to 14 consecutive division titles that resulted in only one World Series championship. And Kasten's response, to be fair, I've been with teams in my career that went to the World Series 7 times. That's not an accident. It's also not something I'm embarrassed by. Of the 6 times those teams did not win, 2 lost in Game 7 and 2 lost in Game 6. That doesn't suggest to me a philosophy that is amiss and needs to be completely revamped. And that's the point I made many times, that the Dodgers almost won the World Series in 2017. You know, if Yu Darvish pitches better in either of the games he pitched, they win the World Series. If Kenley Jansen and Brandon Morrow can hold a 2-run lead or a 3-run lead for 2 innings or whatever it was, 2-run lead for 3 innings, they win the World Series. If the Astros aren't cheating cheaters, the Dodgers win the World Series. And so it's kind of ridiculous to me to think that the Dodgers deliberately put together a team that was good enough to make it to Game 7 of the World Series, but just not quite good enough to win the whole thing. I don't think it's a different sport you play in the postseason. The fact is, you play baseball. The Dodgers won 106 games last year. They were good enough to win the World Series last year. The fact that they didn't win, that falls on the players, and in this case, maybe the manager, not on the front office. It's not a question of poor roster construction. And Kasten addresses that a little bit. And when Plaschke says, this town is different, this market is starving, it demands a philosophy that will allow Friedman to spend whatever it takes to find the Kirk Gibson-type player who can end that 31-year drought. And, I mean, it's simple-minded thinking. Oh, you got to get somebody who can play in October. And Kasten's response, I really liked it. He said, there are a lot of players who went to the World Series, weren't successful until the one time they finally were. It's not a thing you can predict very easily. Last year, you were all fixated on us getting Bryce Harper. Not one of you were screaming, you got to re-sign Daniel Hudson. 2 years ago, not one of you were saying, you have to go out and make a trade for Steve Pierce. I'm sorry, I just don't agree with your thesis. And he's absolutely right. I've said it before. Every team, or every player, is bad in October until they're good. Some people are never bad, but the fact that some people are good from the start doesn't mean they won't be bad next time, and the fact that somebody was bad in October doesn't mean he'll be bad next time. It's basically the same game. I'm sure there are some guys in the major leagues who are mentally weak enough that they actually do struggle in the bright lights. I think the vast majority of players with that weakness don't make it to the big leagues, because guess what? There's lots of bright lights in the big leagues. And so they don't get in a position to get a chance to prove themselves in October. I think the vast majority of guys who have become starting players on a World Series quality team are the kind of guys who aren't going to be too badly affected by the bright lights of the World Series, at least not for their whole career. Maybe your first time, yeah, maybe Cody Bellinger in 2017 really was overwhelmed. I don't know, but there's no reason to believe that Cody Bellinger in 2020 won't be good in the postseason. It all comes down to getting hot at the right time, and I think your best chances in the postseason are to have the best players possible. Let's scroll back up a little bit. He talks a little bit about the payroll. They talk about Gerrit Cole, and the Dodgers tried to get Gerrit Cole, but I'll just read what Plaschke wrote. Friedman made the strong decision to sign Cole, but was outbid by the Yankees. Cole later claimed he always wanted to be a Yankee, but Scott Boras' clients generally go to the biggest spenders, so folks wonder why Guggenheim didn't just pay for the ace. And as always with Bill Plaschke, when he says people are wondering, what he means is I'm wondering because I'm a mental midget. And Cass's response, it's clear now. I think it was clear to us in the middle of the process. He wanted to be a Yankee. He just did. In retrospect, I think we were just a stalking horse to get a number he finally could get from a team he wanted to go to. I don't have any quibble with his approach or with Scott's approach. It was all very fair, but he wanted to be somewhere. He got a lot of money to be where he wanted to be. And that's kind of what I've believed about the Cole thing. I think the Dodgers were the team he used to get the team he wanted to play for to offer him the best offer. I think he was going to the Yankees almost no matter what. Once the Yankees got involved, he was going to get the highest offer he could get from the Yankees and then take it. If he had come back to the Dodgers and said, the Yankees have offered me nine years, whatever, $326 million or whatever it was, maybe Friedman then says, okay, I'll give you 10 and 350. And then Cole would take that back to the Dodgers, to the Yankees, and say, here's what the Dodgers offered me. I think Cole was going to the Yankees, and I believe Caston, and I agree with him there. Plaschke asks about the new LA Times story last offseason from Bill Shaken that documented the club's desire to keep the player payroll under the competitive balance tax, leading one to believe there's a mandate to that effect. And here's what Caston said, and this is kind of the big money paragraph to me. No, Caston said. 2 years ago, it was important, even though it was never a mandate. Last year was less important. This year, there's no real need for that. Last year, we did reach out in a couple of respects that would have blown past the CBT, like Bryce Harper. Why it seems to be such a flashpoint here befuddles me. Obviously, the Gerrit Cole thing would have caused us to blow past it. And then Plaschke says Caston added that the roster is far from finalized, and when it is, they will probably spend beyond the CBT. Caston said the team we have now is not going to be the team we have to start the postseason. I expect that team this year, it looks like it's going to be well over the CBT or somewhat over. The interesting thing with that is currently they're about $40 million under. And so the big question becomes, how are they going to go over it, and when are they going to go over it? And I thought it was interesting that Caston specifically said the team we have now won't be the team that starts the postseason. And I think some of that is just posturing and keeping the negotiating position strong because, for example, if Caston commits to spending a lot of money this offseason, well, that gives the Red Sox a stronger negotiating position in a Mookie Betts stock, for example. Whereas if Caston says, we're fine waiting until the trade deadline, we're fine with whatever, then that takes away some of the Red Sox leverage. The Dodgers can always look at Mookie Betts in the summer. We got a comment from somebody, or maybe it was on my Twitter, saying maybe the Dodgers should wait till July because Betts' price is probably going to go down because he will have less team control in July. And while I agree with that mostly, the downside of that is as his price goes down, that means there are more potential teams in the bidding because right now the Dodgers might be the only team that can meet their price, which would be taking on David Price's contract and having, a solid prospect or two to give them. And so I think the Dodgers want to get it done this offseason, but I think they're okay waiting, and I'm okay with that too because the fact is their division – they should have no problem winning their division. And that means they have until July to address any roster issues that they might have for October. I want them to get it done this offseason. I still believe they will. But I think Caston is right on there. And I think he gave a pretty good answer. I think that's all we really need to talk about. He talks about the TV deal, or specifically he tells Plaschke, I'm not going to talk about the TV deal. for this, and he tells Plaschke several times, basically, you're an idiot, without using those words, and I'm a big fan of that. So, because the bottom line is, Bill Plaschke is an idiot. Stan Kasten has been an idiot in the past, but he's also really good at his job. And this time around, Stan Kasten actually said the right things, and I am a fan of that. So that's going to wrap it up for today. Like I said, please don't go read the Plaschke article. He doesn't deserve your clicks. Vince and I should be back together tomorrow to talk about the second base list from Buster Olney and, you know, any other news that comes up. We'll have some fun Dodger talk for you. Please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it, please subscribe there. You can follow us on social media. We are on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text at any time. The number is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you will be here with us. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you later.
D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all hard. All heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!